Welcome to the Ag Future Podcast, presented by Alltech. Join us as we explore the future of farming, food, and nutrition.
Today, we're talking with David Hunt, CEO and co-founder of Canthus, a company dedicated to digitizing agricultural practices. David also sits on the Exponential Advisory Board of Singularity University in Silicon Valley. So you've been working for several years on digitizing agriculture in different ways, right? Tell us a little bit about why that's important, what the potential is.
Yeah, so I suppose how we got into all of this was we looked at what was going on in the agricultural world, and myself and my brother got extremely concerned about how if we keep on farming in our Green Revolution style agriculture of monocultures plus chemical inputs, we're effectively going to kill our planet. And we realized that we need to make things far more efficient and farm in far more environmentally friendly ways in order to stave off what currently looks like an inevitability at the moment. We then set about seeing, well, what's the best way to do this? And one of the things I didn't know, despite coming from an agricultural background and all this sort of thing, I didn't realize the sheer absence of measurement that was in at commercial field or commercial livestock level in agriculture. And we sort of realized that if you want to improve agriculture, first of all, you need to start measuring things. And then once you can measure things, you can work out how to improve them. And then ultimately, that will hopefully lead to a better system. I'm very much a science fiction fan, and one of the things that always excited me as a child was the concept of robots working in fields and working in farms and all that sort of thing. And I suppose when we started out on this journey, it was all towards a view of perhaps what do we need to do to get robots in our fields. And one of the things that we found out was that a robot's actually only as good as the data that feeds it. So if you have an absence of data and an absence of measurement in agriculture, then the robots are never going to be there. And my personal opinion is we'll never be able to move away from monocultures until we have on-demand precision harvesting, which probably needs to be performed by autonomous robots given the increasing cost of human labor. When we went at looking at what was the best way to systematically capture commercial field scale data in a manner that would be affordable to the farmer, we couldn't get beyond the fact that digital imaging was going to be the way to do it. And camera technology is increasing at an exponential level at the moment. You know, we only just got HD TVs, and now they're talking about 4K TVs, Ultra HD, 8K TVs, all this sort of thing. And it's that technology and how cheap it's becoming that is enabling us to use drones to get highly precise images of what's going on in our fields, far beyond the capability of what we can see with the human eye. And one of the big concepts that I think people in farms need to understand, particularly crop farmers when it comes to drones, the drone is incidental. It is simply the best current delivery device we have for giving 1 centimeter per pixel resolution, which is what is the minimum requirement, in my opinion, to spot what's going on in a farm.
All right, that sounds pretty exciting. Tell me about some of the ways that you want to take that visual information, like what would be the practical application? Maybe you don't know all the potential applications until you dive into the data, but what are some of the things you have in mind?
Yeah, so some of the things we can do today, so stand counts are something very useful that we can do today. And one of the biggest decisions that a farmer makes every year is when they plant a field and the crops start emerging, if areas in the field don't emerge, well, what do I do about it? And what you can do when you can count every individual plant in a field, you can make a data-driven decision as to whether it makes financial sense to resow or simply do nothing. And, you know, I know enough farmers to know how difficult it is for a farmer to sit on their hands and do nothing when they're looking at a big bare patch in the middle of their field. But financially speaking, when it comes to your profit margin, it may actually be the best decision to simply do nothing. Introducing data-driven decision to agriculture via increased digital measurement is what enables you to do things like that. Other applications that we have today, crop maturity analytics is something we can do today. And again, the whole point of that is, you know, when you ask farmers, when do you harvest their fields? It's generally they're afraid bad weather is coming, so they're going to harvest before the bad weather. They see the neighbor out or the local agronomist tells them to do it. Very little of it is based on data. And I heard Aidan Connolly make a great point today that today we farm based on what we see happening in our fields or what we we see happening with our animals. Increasingly, as agriculture becomes more digitized, we're going to start farming data. We'll look at what the data feedback is coming off our farm, and we'll be making decisions on our farming activity based on that.
You talked about, you know, the importance of getting to a sustainable form of agriculture. What are some of the problems that we have the way we're farming currently? And what's the potential risk for not dealing with it?
Yeah, so obviously the potential risk of not dealing with it is our planet dies. And, you know, that doesn't mean that humans are going to go extinct or anything like that. It just means that this planet won't be a very nice place to live. And I know Elon Musk is doing everything he can to get to Mars, but, you know, I'm not sure that that's going to be much nicer. So when we look at the principal risks that can be dealt with using digital technologies, number one is our out of control nitrogen cycle. I mean, currently we're spending $140 billion annually on nitrogen fertilizer, and depending on the target plant, 17 to 26% of that is being used by the target plant, and the rest is being taken up by weeds or getting locked in the soil or going as runoff into our waterways. And so we have a 100 billion plus annual inefficiency loop in terms of our nitrogen fertilizer. And the difficulty with that from an environmental perspective is, unfortunately, nitrogen fertilizer does a lot of damage to our soil. So we're in a situation where we're putting more and more fertilizer to get the same result. And the only way we're going to break out of that sort of vicious cycle is by getting technology that allows us to apply fertilizer and other chemical inputs on demand when appropriate to do so, as opposed to just doing blanket hit and hope spraying as we kind of do it today.
And will the application in the future be more directly just to the plant's root system, or do you think there will be ways to deliver it more efficiently so that it's not covering the whole field?
Yeah, like, I mean, I really can't see beyond using robotic applications. And I mean, DJI drones have already released a robotic sprayer that can spray 60 acres per hour at a price level of $15,000. So when you have that married with a digital interpretation system that is able to spot where it needs to be sprayed, and I mean, one of the things that we can do is we can spot very early where there's a problem in your field, and then you identify the problem, and then you can send in your precision sprayer to spray the area in the field when it's only impacting a couple of square meters, as opposed to having to spray the entire field when you see it with your own eyes.
So how visually with a camera determine where you need nitrogen? I assume that's based on plant growth or color.
Yeah. So nitrogen application is not something we can do with visual technology today in a manner that is affordable to a farmer. The best sort of sensor tech to use to identify where you need nitrogen is hyperspectral. And that is way too expensive to be using at farm level currently. And the other thing is, if you do decide to spend the money on something like hyperspectral and look at the start of the year, that is only so useful because your requirements are going to change throughout the growing season. And for a technology to actually make a meaningful impact, it needs to be cheap enough that you can use it consistently throughout the growing season so you can apply inputs as and when needed by the plant.
So how will you make it cheaper?
So if you look at sort of RGB cameras, which is like the camera in your smartphone or the camera in a normal camera, they are getting incredibly cheap, incredibly quickly. And again, so cheap that you have a camera included on your smartphone for free that a professional photographer would have killed for 10 years ago. And hyperspectral is the same. The underlying drivers of cost of that technology are the same for RGB. The reason hyperspectral is so expensive is RGB cameras look at 3 spectra, red, green, and blue. Hyperspectral look at 200 spectra. So your underlying data costs is obviously a large multiple of the cost associated with an RGB camera, not to mention the cost of the sensor itself.
Could you go into a little more detail about how excessive nitrogen damages the soil?
I think that is better answered by a soil microbiologist as opposed to an entrepreneur who is doing work in that area.
Okay, fair enough. But you kind of touched on kind of the answer is it messes up the microbial community.
So the understanding that I have is that excessive nitrogen fertilizer applications depletes the microbial life in your soil, especially the microbes that actually fix nitrogen naturally in the soil. So like I know Alltech have products that are attempting to address that problem. But as I said, that's not really my area. So as I said, for someone to comment on that, it should really be a soil PhD as opposed to someone like me.
So I think you mentioned, aside from the nitrogen cycle, two other big issues with agriculture. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Yes, so biodiversity loss is a major one as well. And agriculture is the single most responsible industry in the world for our global loss of biodiversity. And it's estimated that we sacrificed anything of 30 to 40% of our global biodiversity to agriculture already. So it's a really good idea not to sacrifice anymore. And again, when I look at what the best way to overcome biodiversity loss arising from agriculture, the problem sort of twofold. One is we really need to stop using pesticides as much as we do, because obviously that indiscriminately kills all sorts of things, not just the target pest species. And also we need to stop farming in monocultures. And as I said, one of the technologies we've already developed are precision sort of crop. We can spot on a grain by grain basis when a crop is mature and ready to be harvested. When you can do precision on demand harvesting, that will enable you to get away from your combine harvester green revolution paradigm where you have to harvest an entire field in a couple of hours. If you can plant many different species of plant in one field and harvest them on demand when appropriate, that's a far more environmentally friendly way to farm. And in theory, it should also be a far more profitable way for a farmer to farm, because they're not beholden to the commodity markets in an individual crop. They have greater resilience to commodity market uncertainty because they have many different crops. One of the other things that I think farmers should also be aware in the future is there's a big sort of trend creeping in that biosuitability is arguably the best way to grow things. And what I mean by that is, what did nature intend to grow in the area where your farm happens to be? And the more you try and force something to grow where nature didn't intend it to grow, the more chemical inputs and artificial methodologies you're going to need to make that happen. So one of the things I think farmers need to consider in the future is, what should we actually be farming here? Because what did nature intend for us to farm here? Because that's going to minimize how much inputs we need to make it happen. And there's also going to be more exotic types of farming available to us in the near future. I mean, solar panels are a great example. You know, how many farmers in semi-arid regions would actually be better off having solar farms rather than crop or livestock farms? Similarly, you know, there's a chance that we're going to start seeing algae farming developing. So, you know, if you have a high level of solar activity, are you going to be better off farming algae than farming crops or livestock? And, you know, I don't know the answers to these questions, but I do know that we're going to have far more options as to what we do with our land as we move further into the future.
Let's go like one step further and kind of get almost into the science fiction realm a little bit.
That's my favorite realm. No All problem.
Right. So you've mentioned, I don't know if synthetic is the right way, but alternative ways to manufacture commodities like milk, maybe.
Yeah. So if you look on a long enough time horizon, we can already see emerging trends that we're starting to create agents of nutritional complexity of our own creation as applying to biological agents of nutritional complexity. And what I mean by a biological agent of nutritional complexity is an example of one is a cow. You feed a cow grass, you get milk and beef from that animal when you've just fed it grass. So that's what I mean by an agent of nutritional complexity. So we're already starting to see the emergence of synthetic meat. There's synthetic milk, which is a biofermentation process. They got a type of genetically modified yeast that when you feed it sugars, it excretes something that is molecularly identical to milk rather than excreting alcohol. And the other big one is algae. Like Alltech's heterotrophic algae facility never ceases to amaze me. I just think it's one of the most wonderful things I've seen. And the principal reason for that is, on the best land in the world, if you're getting 4.5 tons of wheat out of that a year, you're doing well. If you put a heterotrophic algae plant on the worst land in the world, you can get 60 tons of that stuff every 19 days. And the parallel I sort of draw to this is, you know, it's not dissimilar from where we were in the energy market in the 70s, and principally because we could see that the future of energy was more than likely going to be nuclear plus solar plus batteries, but we had to make our fossil fuel system more efficient and less environmentally harmful in order to buy us time to get there. And we're just about there in the energy market now. So when I look at agriculture, I think, right, there's no doubt whatsoever that if we want to feed 10 billion people by 2050 without destroying our planet, we're going to need stuff like nuclear and solar that give us what we need without depleting our natural resources. I would be sort of arguing that what we're currently trying to do is make green revolution agriculture more efficient and more environmentally friendly until we get to such a point that we can actually create edible, tasty, and nutritious food that comes out of processes like biofermentation, such as synthetic milk and algae. And the other big outlier in that as well is also insect meal. There's a big question, will synthetic meat ever be viable for reasons that are quite long? So I'm not going to go into them here. But the other big issue with synthetic meat is insects are able to convert base nutrients into more complex proteins and things at a 80% efficiency level. So any synthetic meat is going to have to beat how efficient insects are already. And again, just another little one that I always like to say, because I get sort of frustrated with the lack of adoption of insects in our industry, because they're such a suitable food for chickens and fish as well as humans. And the thing I sort of like to say is when we eat insects from the sea, they command a price premium and they're considered a delicacy. But insects that are found on land are considered disgusting, which I really don't get.
That's a really interesting point, because if you take a really good close look at a shrimp or, you know, crayfish or something, they're very much like an insect, closely related. So do you eat any land-based insects?
I have done. Like, you know, they're not that widely available in Ireland or the United States, but I have no issue eating them whatsoever. And the other thing I would sort of make in terms of this, and this is where stuff gets a little bit sort of disgusting, but one of the other big things that's important about sort of heterotrophic algae and insect meal is you can actually use human feces to fuel those technologies. So, you know, scientifically speaking, there's no problem with that whatsoever. But when people think about that, even though it makes sure. tremendous environmental and, you know, ecological sense, that really turns people's stomachs. Yeah. But it's something like, again, if we want to have 10 billion people on this planet, these are the type of solutions we need to think about. You know, we need to make better use of our waste. And if we can use our waste to make food with it, I can't think of a better use case than that.
Right. Maybe a starting point is to feed animals with insect protein.
Well, like, you know, I wouldn't expect us to sort of feed human waste to insects and then immediately eat the insects. When I'm talking about doing that, I do mean stuff like feed the insects to chickens and then we'll eat the chickens, or even feed one group of insects the human waste, feed those insects to other insects, and then we can sort of process those insects at a lot of flavorings and hopefully people will eat them then. But, you know, it's very difficult to predict the way these things will go when it's something quite so disgusting.
That's a lot of very interesting things to think about. I'll leave you with one last question. Can you tell us, how did you name your company and what does the name mean?
Oh, yeah. So apologies. We completely overthought the name, as is our habit. So I did Latin for 6 years, and Canthus is the Latin for the corner of your eye. And in Caesar's propaganda that he used to send back to Rome, he was always winning battles that no one else could win because he saw things out of the corner of his eye that no one else saw. And then there's a huge AI component to what we do as well. So artificial intelligence and machine learning. So Canthus is a portmanteau of Canthus and AI.
Very interesting. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Pleasure. Delighted to be of assistance.
To hear more from David Hunt and many other talks at One, the Alltech Ideas Conference, visit ideas.alltech.com. Access is free after signing up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Ag Future Podcast, presented by Alltech. For show notes and more episodes, visit alltech.com/agfuture.